Hello, everyone. This is Dawn Burks from The Hip is back at you. I am sitting here today with
Tylisa. Once again.
And today we have a very special guest.
Oh, wow.
You are a special guest.
Right. He's a special. I mean, I have been trying to get, I'm going to introduce some of you and oh my God, present to others. Mr. Gromer.
Yes.
Jeffers.
Yes. I feel like we need to like cue the applause.
I know. I feel like you need some theme music.
Hey, you know, hey, I'm going to get some theme music. It's going to be some blues too. You know,
love. That's right. What I imagine when I see Gromer walk by. I'm like blues or
he
jazz.
Does. It's like he has notes following him.
Oh, yeah. He emits smooth.
Right.
Some B.B. King, Bill Melton, Bobby Bland. No, I am so excited to be here today.
I really am.
Two of my favorite people.
Oh, see. Stop it.
Dawn.
Just stop it.
And then our superstar
Why do you guys? Oh, no. We're in the presence of greatness.
They were singing her praises in New Orleans,
that's
by
what,
the way.
Really?
We'll talk about that later.
Well, yes. No.
We're going to get right to it.
Okay. You brought it up.
I said
NAVJ. Now, I have hidden my light under a bushel this week.
Right.
Because I just could not take it anymore. I needed to medicate.
Right.
So I had to step away.
Every now and then we have to do
that,
right?
And I had to tend to my other duties as the TV critic.
Right.
And I had to watch some reality TV. So in order to do that, I had to remove myself from the reality madness that's happening on a real world basis. So what's been going on, Gromer?
Let me tell you.
That's such a big question.
It's sort of like, it's been crazy. I mean, we have, and you're speaking of NABJ, and you know about NABJ. You've been before. And
that's
all that.
National Association of Black Journalists.
And we were in New Orleans, and I was just, you know, making sure my girl over there didn't get in too much trouble.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was watching after
me. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, somebody was blocking me too. But that's another subject. But the Omarosa.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so Dawn tells me you were there. Now, okay, full disclosure. Okay. I was at NABJ.
Right.
I didn't go to that panel.
Right.
Is it because you knew some foolishness was going to happen?
You know, you can feel it in the air, right? Like, it's like, no, I didn't know there was going to be foolishness.
It's kind of like, I don't know if you guys watched the Carmichael show, but like.
Okay. I'm sad it's leaving too.
Me
but that's,
too.
Yeah.
But remember, he's at a mall and he almost gets shot.
He almost gets shot,
and
right.
And they're like, but you're the place that's shoot upable.
Right, exactly.
And so is that how you felt, that it was just shoot upable?
You know, I felt like there might be problematic things that happened. I didn't think that it would be that. You know what I mean? Like,
And let's just set it up first. So at the National Association of Black Journalists in New Orleans last week, there was a panel discussion on police violence or police violence,
like police
against
relations,
right,
black
exactly.
community,
yes,
right.
And for whatever reason, at the last minute,
mm-hmm.
Omarosa of reality TV,
Omarosa Manigault is the hyphenated Stallworth.
Yeah, she just got married to a minister, and she's an aide to Donald Trump.
Yes, mm-hmm.
She was added to the panel discussion.
Right, last minute.
The leader of the panel, the moderator, quit abruptly along with one of the other panelists, which prompted Ed Gordon. I guess Ed Gordon was asked to fill in, and he did. So that's the scene, Ed and Omarosa and the rest of the panelists. And my Twitter started lighting up, right?
Immediately.
Yeah.
And it was weird because I was like, I'm in this space right now. like I'm in the hotel, yeah. but I'm not here. But you see people buzzing because you're at a conference full of journalists.
Right.
Everybody, of course, is immediately going to know because not only are people in the room like texting and tweeting and creating videos, graphics
yeah.
and all these other things, but they're texting their friends like, yo, you need to get to Salon 18.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
you need to run over here. It's crazy.
Right.
People started turning their backs on Omarosa. Like,
yeah.
So it was like almost a full on protest because she was there before she even spoke.
Well, and there are a couple of things with that. I don't think people objected to her being there.
Okay.
Because that would have been great, right? Because
right.
you can light her up if you wanted to. You can light her up about
yeah.
Trump or
which he
her low-key role.
Was trying to do.
Right, exactly. I think she was misplaced on that panel. And I think that's what a lot of people, you know, folks like Roland Martin and others objected to her just being placed on that panel where she said she was going to talk about her father and brother who were slain in violence, not police violence, but were, you know.
Right, just gun violence.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And so on that backdrop, you had Gordon trying to push her on issues related to Trump. It's a panel about police violence and stuff like that.
And I heard her say, that's not what I came here
right,
for.
Right, exactly. So that's where I think the friction stemmed from.
Okay.
And quite frankly, everybody got what they wanted, though. NABJ. There are people like, oh, wow, there is an NABJ conference in New Orleans? Wow.
NABJ still exists.
Yeah,
do you think that Omarosa felt misled by NABJ and how they approached her about being on that panel?
You know, at the end of the day, she had to know that she would get asked some
That's
questions
how I felt
about
too.
Trump
yes.
if they didn't tell her. I believe
especially
they probably did.
Since, yeah. Especially since the before she got there had been so fraught with racial
exactly.
tension.
Right. Tell me about it.
She was a lightning rod.
She's a lightning rod. And, you know, the whole, you know, April Ryan situation,
yes.
who got Journalist right. of the Year, right?
She did.
And, you know, she has expressed concern in you know.
April has said that Omarosa tried to kill a career.
Exactly. So,
on multiple occasions.
Right.
Yes.
So you have that going on.
Right. So many
and,
dynamics.
And I'm going to tell you something, no, Tyler. You went to the sports task force.
I was at
did
the,
you
I was,
see Omarosa there? She was there.
Man, listen, I heard the stories. I heard.
So there was no shame. She just kept the criticism,
yeah.
took the criticism, and kept on moving.
And later okay. that night was at the function.
Oh, man. She
wow.
was at the hotel. I mean, she had VIP access, the whole thing.
Yeah.
So everybody got what they wanted. And NBJ got.
It was almost as if she was playing a role.
Oh, of course. And you know she loves this kind of publicity.
It's a reality show.
Yeah,
it's like real.
Absolutely.
It's Real Housewives of the White House.
So she fits in the administration then.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, she fits.
And I'm going to tell you what's really interesting. And I would love to have these sisters on the show, right? From the
yeah.
hip.
Yeah.
Omarosa, you know, Katrina Pearson. And
yes.
That, you know, and a few others.
Right.
They all are in D.C. They all kind of get together every now and then. They're all these conservative African-American women,
yes.
Trump
mm-hmm.
supporters. It's really fascinating. You know, how they are handling all of this because
right.
it's getting heated now.
It's
heat. You know.
Well, it was heated before because when Omarosa was appointed, there's video out there of her tearfully recounting how she's lost friends and family
oh.
over her support for Trump.
Oh yeah, and let me tell you, there were questions about Trump before this deal. You know, Trump was something that I think African Americans kind of put up with because he was more of a television figure and a reality,
right.
you know, the apprentice, celebrity apprentice. But people remember the Central Park Five. When
yes.
he, you know,
we don't
went
forget
after
the
them
stuff. We may forgive
the Obama, the
yeah,
birther.
The birther.
He put her face to that,
yeah.
you know. And I think now I remember writing a column when after Trump was elected. Right before, it was around the inauguration, saying that he had an opportunity to wipe the slate clean
mm-hmm.
and be whatever kind of president he wanted to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Election's over. You're president now.
Right.
You can And
so you can reverse course on anything, right, or forge ahead. It's exactly. It's forward now.
Because he doesn't really have any ideology, although one is emerging now, right?
Right.
But in the past, I mean, he was all over the place.
He didn't even have a platform, really.
So I wrote that this was his opportunity, if he wanted to try to be, a great president and work with Democrats, because infrastructure improvements, he's for that.
You know, my theory is he never wanted the job.
Yeah, well, something happened because he was like, what did he say? What do you have to lose, African?
Oh, yes. That was
black
literally
folks, what
he
what
said.
Do you have to, yeah.
To a crowd of white people. Yeah. That is the funniest part.
No. That was his African American right. In the back.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you're hilarious. Yes. A joke.
Right.
A true joke.
My.
But that's what he said. He's like, oh, there's my African American.
I mean, but
fortunately, he didn't say something else. There's
right.
My.
My.
I'm like, don't play yourself. Okay.
But he went. He said, just, you know, what do you have to lose? And I think now, I mean, it's like, wow, you know, people. I'm shocked at how he has sort of. The fears that a lot of folks had,
mm-hmm.
Those fears are being realized now. And that surprises me because, as you guys know, in politics, usually you say a lot of crap during a campaign.
Yes,
right?
You do. That you have no intentions on following up on because you know you can't.
Yeah.
And that's at every level, too.
Yeah,
it's not
exactly.
Even just
every level.
So what's happening now with the Charlottesville situation is shocking, the response.
Yes.
A modern day politician would make those kinds of equivalencies that he made, and sort of they were bad people on both sides, and all that is shocking. You remember during the campaign when he was like, "Who's David Duke? Why do I have to denounce him? Who do I have to denounce every?" How he's bending over backwards not to offend white supremacists and neo Nazis. Is very, very surprising, even for Donald Trump.
Yes, even for him.
You guys were actually surprised?
Well,
I mean, just like really, though, y'all were surprised?
Well, I'm look, you never know what's in a person's heart, so I'm not surprised that a person would feel a certain way. But in politics, we have never seen a politician in the modern
just
era say some of the things that he said. So I'm surprised that he's verbalizing and he prides himself on not being politically correct.
Well, he also
I think
goes
he's gone
off script.
To this, exactly. So, I mean, he's a consultant's nightmare.
They have to scramble behind him constantly, which is why we can't even keep a scorecard for what's going on at the White House.
Right. So,
you know, which is why I've been loath to talk about politics too much in this room lately, because by the time I get this out to the public, something else has happened.
But, T, you make a good point, because people, they do come at me and say, why are you surprised? We knew he would be like this.
Yeah. And I feel like the overwhelming amount of black people are kind of like, I mean, obviously he was going to do this, guys. Like, obviously he would respond this way, you know?
But to be fair, a lot of brown people feel this way about a lot of majority issues.
Right.
Is that we've seen it before. We knew it was coming. We knew it was coming. But there's still always, we have such hope. I mean, isn't that how President Obama got elected? We got hope.
Right.
No matter who it is, we have hope that the person has a good heart and is going to do the righteous thing.
And let's face it.
Not the alt-righteous thing.
Trump got more African-American support than Mitt Romney in terms of percentages.
Did.
And there are some brothers and sisters out there who kind of liked him during the campaign. You know, they may not have voted for him, but, you know, maybe they liked him on The Celebrity Apprentice.
Yeah.
They liked the way, I mean.
Or maybe they liked how brash he was because, you know, the swagger.
Right. But.
Yes, I did.
He's increasingly looking like a 71.
Yes, I can.
That's right. But he's increasingly looking like a 71-year-old guy who's out of touch. And, you know, Senator Corker. Bob Cork, I believe, Tennessee, basically called him unstable, or at least the administration. That's a Republican. Yeah. So we're at a really critical point here.
Yeah,
it's
I think
get wild.
Part of the Republicans, bless their hearts, I'm so Southern, the Republicans were so desperate to grab the office.
Yeah, they got in bed with...
Got in bed with Trump. Yeah. And now they're finding that, I mean, any hint of the word Nazi, and you have to distance yourself.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you wake up in the morning after one of those encounters and you're like, oh, my God, did I really do this? And you try to make it work, and it doesn't work. And
what's the joke? You don't pay them. You paid them to leave.
Yes. Well, yeah.
I'm just
That's
saying.
Right. You don't pay them.
You don't pay for the services. You pay for them to leave.
Look at those innocent ears over there.
I'm just burning her.
No, because I just find, I just don't understand.
Her mind looks blown.
No, because I'm just frustrated, and I feel like I'm going through this period of, grieving for the loss of life in Charlottesville.
Right.
And the response, he called the mom during the funeral. The mom of Heather Heyer said she received the first call during the funeral of her daughter.
Which means he wasn't even aware enough.
You should have been there. Why are you calling?
And his people weren't aware enough. Oh, he's not going within 200 miles of that place.
Yeah.
But the biggest winery?
he better be careful also, because you heard that some folks have pulled out of Mar-a-Lago.
The convention. They pulled
there.
The big convention out. He's starting to look. Once it starts hitting his pocketbook, I mean, there's so much happening now. His co-author of the Art of the Deal is saying that, well, I've known him for 30 years, and I'm pretty sure a resignation is coming. I mean, he's done everything but hand him his resignation letter without a signature, begging them to do something
about
him.
So you think that the resignation is coming?
I don't know if it is.
I don't think so either, because he's a fighter.
Yeah.
We know that. This all depends on a couple of things, I think. One, Bob Mueller, the special counsel, what his investigation uncovers. And I don't think Russia will be important in terms of some of Trump's campaign folks or friends and cronies and all that, perhaps.
Or family.
Yes, exactly. But I think the exposure from Trump is everything else. We don't know about his finances, right?
Right,
his
tax.
Mueller's looking at all of that. And the danger, and that's why you remember when Trump drew that line, you better don't look at this or whatever.
Yeah.
I think the exposure there is, I'm not saying Trump has done anything wrong.
Right. No one's saying that.
But you don't want a special counsel looking at everything, right?
You don't want him parsing through the numbers. I don't want him in my numbers.
Yeah. And that's what happened with Bill Clinton. I mean.
Right.
It didn't start with Monica Lewinsky.
No, it did not.
But
that was the way they could get in.
Yes, exactly. So you don't want that situation. So it depends on that. And also, at some point, I think these Republicans on Capitol Hill are going to focus on their conservative agenda and realize that, do we really need the president to get health care passed? Do we really need the president to get tax reform passed? Because it's not like Trump is.
No.
Like, as Obama would send up proposals, right?
Yeah.
Obama's folks crafted the Affordable Care Act, whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then the negotiations began. Trump hasn't sent up any proposals of his own, right?
No.
He just said, get it done. So they're going to realize, you know what? If we can convince the constituents out there and our folks that we are doing this conservative agenda, then maybe we can work on this agenda and try to tune Trump out, and then at some point deal with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But their problem is, as soon as one of them, in Trump's view, steps out of line, he fires him.
Yeah.
He goes at him.
Yeah, he goes at him.
And then the folks mm-hmm. Americans out there, those Trump supporters, are still loyal.
Yeah, they are. Yes,
I was just saying yesterday how I am so fed up. I am so fed up with op-eds and news stories and all of these different pieces that are being published by various publications nationwide that are like, well, you know, Trump's base still supports him. I'm like, yes, of course they do. This is exactly what they voted for.
Well, and also, there are so many people that feel like that he has given them a voice.
No matter how dramatic no matter how outlandish, no matter how far-fetched and ridiculous, making false equivalencies that equate somebody fighting against racism with a neo-Nazi,
and
with a white supremacist.
And they won't even acknowledge that. Here's the thing, Talisa and I were talking earlier, is that a tactic that someone used was also one just used by ISIS.
Yeah.
In Barcelona with that attack, the driving of the car into the crowd of people.
Right.
Let's do this damage. Like, and then, but you still aren't connecting, you know, you still aren't seeing white supremacists as a terrorist group. You still aren't seeing these people that were marching or whatever as some form of like domestic terror. You're not seeing that. But when it happens abroad in Barcelona in the middle of Las Ramblas, then it matters.
Or they're also saying that when it happens with any other group, that is terrorism.
Right.
Anybody but them. No.
The Black Panther Party was a domestic terrorist group.
No one's willing to equate the things that should be equated, but they're willing to make these false equivalencies, which we're talking about. So I think it's you and I mentioned earlier that people are willing to talk on the surface about it to death, but what are we going to do about it, you know?
Yeah.
What can we? They need to have honest conversations. No one is.
You know what's also disturbing mm-hmm. is that the voice, the vehicle for information, the traditional vehicle, the media,
mm-hmm.
there's so much distrust now.
Yes.
And so many Americans are tuning out the media, or either that or picking sides and sort of accepting what they want to hear and rejecting what they don't.
Silos.
Yeah, that it's making it difficult to for voters, for Americans to have, and it's their fault in a way. We, the media, deserve some of the blame.
Yes, true.
But Americans need to shake themselves back into a reality where they say, okay, let me evaluate this not from a partisan lens, but from reality. Is this what this guy is supposed to be doing? Right. Is there chaos in the Trump administration? If the answer is yes, then deal with that. You still can be a Trump supporter.
Yes.
And be critical of them.
Yeah, why do people think that you can't criticize something that you support? Right. They just feel like I need to 100% be behind you all the time. And that's how Trump even works. If somebody's not 100% behind him, he's like, nope, can't trust you, bye.
Does this stem from W, who is now cuddly, saying you're either with us or against us?
Yeah, and back to Ronald Reagan's
back 11th to Reagan.
Commandment, shalt not speak ill about another Republican.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people are choosing their R jerseys and their D jerseys. But unfortunately, the media used to be, a forum where you could say, okay, yeah, we trust Walter Cronkite or whatever. Now, with the rise of cable news and all of that, it's
partisan.
And I feel for a lot of viewers. I mean, I don't know
mm-hmm.
who to. I mean, you turn on Fox News and you're constantly being assaulted by an agenda. You turn on another network and it's the same thing. They're just constantly going after Trump with foam dripping out of their mouth.
Right.
And I will say this, if Trump does something good, we should acknowledge it.
We
should.
Yeah.
I agree.
So, I mean, we all need to get right in a sense, but we need to also hold voters accountable.
Because there's rhetoric all around us, and everyone is so entrenched in what they're already thinking that they're not willing to acknowledge something from the other side.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's really disheartening. And there's I'm going to tell you something, that my mother is 83 years old. She was born during Jim Crow. And I remember talking to her when Trump won. And I was talking to her about how I've never seen such vitriol between friends about politics. And I've never seen the country like this. And first thing she said was, baby, keep on living.
Yeah, yeah.
Second thing she said, this is a woman who for much of her life didn't have the right to vote.
Yeah.
She was what they call an impartial observer.
Yeah, she lived through Jim Crow, the 60s,
yeah,
all of that. Yeah.
All of that. She, you know, she was what they call an impartial observer. And even she said that she had never seen it like this. And that crystallized something for me. Because if she made it through that, if the country made it through that, then the country can make it through this.
Yeah. I think what the country has to do, the movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even before the 50s and 60s civil rights movement, the, you know, what the Porters were doing and all that in the 20s, 30s, 40s, the, you know, the Niagara movement, which led into the NAACP after after World War One. What all those movements did was confront an issue that everybody knew was out there. Today, we try to pretend, or some of us try to pretend like it doesn't exist, that Obama was a post-racial president.
Yeah,
and we don't talk about these issues. And when we don't talk about them, we don't tell it like it is.
They fester.
They fester. And it's difficult now because everybody's thinking this is 2017, right?
We're not even that far off.
Yeah, we're still talking about Confederate monuments.
Yeah. And here, I was just going, oh my goodness, get out of my head.
Right.
Because my thing about the Confederate monuments, it feels as if to me that people on each side feel helpless in some way. So they focus their attention on these visible symbols of time past. And it's the one thing that they can do, that they feel like they can do.
Right.
On both sides of this coin. Okay, we can argue to take them down and we can argue to keep them up. They really don't matter that much in the general scheme of things, right?
Yeah. I'm like, there are statues that I'm seeing now and I'm like, wow.
Oh, wow.
That's a Confederate.
Right.
Look, I had no idea.
I didn't even know it was there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Meanwhile, the agenda in Washington, you know, voter suppression and you know, criminal sentencings with drug convictions and all that.
Right.
That's
mandatory
going on.
Sentencing.
Well, there you go.
Exactly. Exacerbating all the, like, the crime bill that came up.
Those are the real issues.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
So
we're going to have to do a part two.
Oh, yeah. Because we still have a lot to talk about.
All we're telling you guys from the hip at Still From the Hip at Talisa Johnson.
At Gromer Jeffers.
All we're saying, for real though, and I know it's overused, but stay woke.
Yeah.
Don't let them distract you. Keep an eye on things that they're actually doing in the government.
Yeah. You're allowed to be focused on multiple things at one time.
Right.
And be independent and think for yourself and read.
And read and research. And oh my gosh, read and watch Gromer Jeffers. He's our political reporter.
He's a star.
He's a star. He's excellent.
You guys are so sweet. I mean, I just love being in here with my sisters.
You know I wouldn't say it if it weren't true.
Yeah.
Because I don't roll like that.
Neither of us would.
No.
If you're not listening to him or reading him, yes.
Yeah.
If you're not reading him, what are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing? Anyway, this has been From the Hip with Talisa Johnson. And Gromer Jeffers.
Yeah, we're going to talk about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson next.
Yes,
yeah,
we
next
are.
Week.
Oh, my goodness. Thomas Jefferson. Yes, we will.
Because part of when Trump was saying it, I was like, oh, okay. You know, we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it.
There are no saints
back in
the colonial era.
You know what,
era,
though?
Right?
I'm going to leave you with something my mama used to say to me. I always leave y'all with something my mama used to say
to
me.
Right. We should just make that a closing segment.
That lady. She said to me one time, honey, the only perfect man is a dead one.
Ah.
And we're out.
Wow.
I'm going to think about
that.
Bye.
Bye.